basically there's an arbitrary point from which you will edit, okay. Unless you're really lazy.
This is true.
All right, welcome to Mustard Mayonnaise. I am Matt.
I am Richard.
And we discuss things in the entertainment industry that capture our interest in the previous week.
So what captured our interest in the previous week? I'm not really awake.
Wow. It's like almost noon.
Well, it's been a long week.
I didn't get to sleep till 3 last night. Went over to a friend's house yesterday, played an 8-hour board game.
Jesus.
Yeah.
You are a nerd. What was the board game?
Twilight Imperium.
The fudge is that?
Basically, it's Axis and Allies in space. But more complicated.
Wow.
I mean, actually, generally, when you think about it, all board games are...
I just can't think of anything I'd rather to do less. I'll hear that these people playing their Warhammer games with all their
Well, Warhammer's different. There's an RPG aspect to that with miniatures and...
I know, but
I can't get into that.
But even some of those complex board games, it's like if it's beyond Risk, it's too much for me.
Oh, I completely and utterly am bad at them. But mm-hmm. It's hanging out with friends and...
Yeah, I hear you.
And it's one of those games with a gazillion rules, and that's how you win, is mastery of the rules and knowing when this one card will do its thing. And
yep.
I will never, ever master rules for games like that, and I don't even try. So whatever, I'm not... As long as I don't... If I'm not
It's like video games. The only way you're going to do it is by playing over and over again. And with a game like that...
Not necessarily.
Either you have to just memorize something or... I don't know. I just find nothing. The perfect game for me is something I can figure out in 3 minutes and then figure out the nuances. You can master Monopoly by understanding some basic fundamentals, and that's all I care about. Monopoly is as complicated as it gets.
I get what you're saying. It just so happens that some of my friends are...
Oh, no, I'm not putting down you and your friends at all.
No, they're uber with that sort of thing.
Yeah, I know, and they're probably couldn't stand things I really get into.
So movies, DVDs, TV, video games, these are the things we discuss. So if we keep it... as recent as possible, and there's no reason we should, since we tend to bounce around our topics. I saw Zodiac Friday night.
No spoilers. I haven't seen it.
Yeah, no spoilers.
Turns out it was Spider-Man. I haven't seen it. I have studiously avoided even all critical commentary on it, so be very careful to not ruin my movie-going experience.
Wow, you were handcuffing me, Mon Frere. You would have seen it by now.
Friday night, I started in Seattle at 6 in the morning, drove to Everett, then drove all the way down to Portland, then drove all the way back. So that was a 19-hour day, including 500 miles of driving. Yesterday was another monstrous day, so I just haven't been able to see it. Planning on probably seeing it today or tomorrow. Go ahead, but just please bear in mind that this is a movie
Fincher was counting on you.
Truly and counting epically on. Want to see badly and want to have the primo experience. And if you do want to give away a spoiler, I'll cover my ears and go lotta. So, in the corner, I will say,
it's exactly what everyone is saying it is.
Okay.
Even if you've just read Wells.
But here's the irony. I haven't read a single thing.
Oh, something.
No, I honestly don't. You're actually saying I do? I honestly know nothing. The minute I get to the...
Richard is lying to us.
I'm not. The minute I've gotten to something, I've just stopped. The extent of what I've read, and this is the honest to God absolute truth, the extent of what I read was an aside from either Poland or Wells or something saying... I think they were saying positive yet tempered review or something in the something camp or so. It was something like that. That was it. And I literally have read nothing else. When you're
And we should point out, honest to God means nothing to you. Let's review. When Richard worked at Sears, his name tag said Beelzebub. Beneath Richard's siding on his remodeled house... On the house wrap is spray painted what?
Not spray painted. It's taped the number 666.
And all that right. Was a... So honest to God means okay. Nothing to
honest
you.
To Beelzebub.
Honest to Angus, however, has some meaning.
Well, seriously, I honestly have actually not. But I do want to hear your thoughts on it.
It's a good film. You will enjoy it.
Is it a Fincher-like film?
You will probably think so more than I did.
Really?
In reflection, because I've been trying to think about what I'm going to say about it, there were probably three or four shots that you could identify as, that's a David Fincher shot.
Really?
You said you identified one in the trailer.
Oh,
which...
it was this tracking shot of, it was over the top and following a car, but it was kind
of... That's one of them. Yeah. And I didn't recognize it at the time, but when I saw the movie, I was like, well, clearly that is a Fincher shot. So there was probably four of those that I twigged on. You might... twig on
what
more.
What about the feel of San Francisco in the mid 70s?
Absolutely perfect.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking for. I saw Mark Ruffalo's hair and all this other stuff. I mean, just all these little things I was looking at going, wow, this is like...
And honestly, most of the reviews are discussing how... that aspect of the film, the meticulousness of the detail, you know, almost...
See, I'm totally into that stuff. Even if the movie isn't that great.
I haven't read any comparisons between that and L.A. Confidential, which also I remember was made of the fact of how detailed it was when it came out, and now.
Well, you know what would be interesting to compare it to when I eventually do see it is to compare it to Dirty Harry, because Dirty Harry was a movie that came out in 73, I think, and it was. And it was filmed in San Francisco. This is of the time, and it has a similar serial killer based on the Zodiac killer.
There are some references.
And that'd be cool. I'm looking forward to seeing that because in that one they were capturing the time as it was at the time. It'd be interesting to see this 30 years hence version of the early 70s of San Francisco, because Dirty Harry was a cool movie. It was very much an attack on that whole liberal idea. They ascribed everything to the liberal ideology, basically the movie, and and San Francisco was a scummy, seedy city in Dirty Harry. And I'm wondering how this will kind of portray it.
One of my favorite scenes, and I grew up in the Bay Area.
Yep.
I wasn't in San Francisco during the 70s. But there was a scene where the news trucks are pulling up, and it's like really first generation Suburbans, with the local affiliates, you know, KPIX and KTVU, and it was one of those, you know, one of those things like when the band is playing, you know, we thought they knew how to rock in Shelbyville, but nobody rocks like, looks at the back of his guitar, Springfield. And everyone's like, "Woo! He mentioned our town." And since I grew up with those affiliates, I'm like, "Oh, like it's the San Francisco network affiliates," and I got such a retarded charge out of that.
But that
was cool. There were a couple other local references, which I mentioned in an email, which most people, media snobs, or you know, like Herb Cain.
Yep.
Anybody lived in the Bay Area knows who Herb Cain was, a columnist for the Chronicle.
Okay, now again, haven't seen anything, but I managed to catch The Daily Show on with Jake Gyllenhaal.
I saw that.
And they show a scene from the movie, which I can't wait to see the movie, but I had a bit of a bone to pick with it, because it seemed like is the Jake Gyllenhaal character legitimately retarded? Because he's sitting there with his phone, he's explaining how, waiting for the phone, he's sitting there with his wife, and he's explaining how he's investigating this stuff, and she's going, "You shouldn't be doing this." He reads the Chronicle, and he goes, "Well, I don't think he reads Herb Cain." And I'm thinking, I live in Seattle, and I admittedly, I love newspapers. I know all about Herb Cain. I know about his institution. That would be the one thing you would expect everybody to read, and they're sort of implying he would.
I had
read
the exact same thought, however.
Yeah.
Maybe that was, I don't know when Herb Cain started writing. That may have been.
I heard it was like in the early 60s. I think the early 70s was the prime, but maybe I'm right. Anyway, it was like a slight aside that was kind of.
My thinking was either that A, that was before the column had really solidified itself and or gained in popularity. Or B, maybe there was some sort of intra-newspaper friction, even though that wasn't discussed anywhere else in the movie. But so many other things about this movie are so detail-oriented.
Yeah.
That's such a blinding one. I'm sure there was a reason
was an interesting aside, because I thought, damn, that it kind of, for like a split second, I'm going, wow, I know all about Herb Cain. I never even lived in San Francisco. I think he's probably one of the two or three most famous local columnists out there,
I agree.
Him, Mike Royko, and others. But anyway, I cannot wait to see it. So Overall, what would your overall grade be? A, B, C, A minus, B plus, B minus, C?
A minus.
Yep.
It's, you know, it's
was a... Was it creepy?
No. There were elements of it that were creepy. But it's... And there were a few, like, God, he did a number of shots in the rain.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't remember it raining that much in San Francisco. I think Fincher's a little too much in love with the rain shot.
Sometimes directors get that way. I was watching a movie last night called Nick of Time. Have you ever seen that? Johnny Depp.
And I've seen bits and pieces.
Real-time movie where some guy, he's forced into killing or trying to kill this governor or whatever. The director, John Badham, filmed some of it. He went so overboard on ambiance. He would film like a train station using all natural light streaming through the upper windows. You could not see a frickin' thing. There was nothing. Looking in there, I'm going, this is insanity. People are going along like it's not pitch black when they're going in there. And sometimes directors, sometimes when they'll do something like that, if after a while you get into it, and I get it, but this one I never got into. I just kept searching for what the hell I'm supposed to see. Horrible, horrible thing. And Fincher, though, normally is like much better at that. But you're saying he just like dripped the thing in rain, or?
No, not like that. Just there are a few too many scenes, I thought, that took place in rain. Really? From what I can remember of the San Francisco weather.
You feel bad because I know a lot of directors, for them, rain helps them. It helps. If they're having trouble setting a mood, they can throw rain in there and it will make the visuals look glistening and it will make this and that. But you just go, is that a crutch? Are you, was it not, were you not doing a good enough job? Or
I
could not imagine Fincher doing that. Yeah, you're right.
For me, it's a couple of different things. It's a good movie. I don't know if I need to own the DVD. Although clearly the DVD is going to have an extra at least half hour of footage. There's a couple of different overall themes that have been going on in the discussion of the film. And one is the process of cutting this movie down, because he turned in the first cut and it was a little over 3 hours.
Yeah.
And the discussion of how do you then remove, because Fincher knew that three hours was too long.
Yep.
And how do you do that? And there was one scene that he wanted to do that he shot or that he wanted to shoot that was basically a transition of 4 years. And he wanted to do it over the course of, was it 4 years or 10 years? Multiple years. And he wanted to do it over the course of 4 minutes of having a black screen and the music changing, you know, so the songs blend into one another.
Jesus, he was going to put a black screen for 4 minutes with the songs?
I'm pretty sure that was it. I wouldn't swear
well,
up and down.
If but, anybody can do something like that and think it's cool, it would be him. Its face, that sounds atrocious.
So he cut it out, and now there's, you know, now it's a transition, and it says 4 years later. Mm. So, you know, that's how he cuts. So that was part. And the other big meme, if you will, following this movie around is how many takes Fincher likes to do.
Yeah, I read about that.
They've done some interviews, and Jake Gyllenhaal saying, you know, when you do 70 takes for something, you really have to wonder, maybe one of the takes was okay.
Yeah.
You know, and that
I was actually stunned by that actors rarely ever, especially when you're with what is generally regarded as an important, great filmmaker, you rarely ever point that out, even though it was painful and you're ticked
there's
off.
There's been follow-up comment. He commented, you know, he followed up on his own comment saying, look, I loved the experience. It was pain. Yeah. Parts of it were very painful at the time.
Yep.
Because, you know, that's a lot of takes. But you really just do need to give yourself to the director and say, this is my job. I'm going to do it. It's no problem. And yes, I didn't enjoy it at the time necessarily, but I totally and completely agree with what he was doing. And I think that's fine.
Yeah.
Because I think if I were an actor, there's got to be a point when you're like, oh, come on, didn't we get it maybe 20 or 30 times already?
Yeah.
And beyond that, you have to wonder, I have total respect for a director that has a vision of something in their head, and they need to get that. That's what they need to see for the shot to work.
Yep.
On the other hand, it's like there's a point when you're like, you know what? That's close enough. On
well,
the 30th
true.
Take, that is close enough that I don't need to do another 10 takes.
But Fincher, like Kubrick, Fincher is somewhat like Kubrick. Kubrick was famous for saying, I'm gonna spend a little bit on a movie, but I'm gonna spend a lot of time making it. So I'm gonna have a really small crew, and we are just gonna film until the cows come home. And he would do 100 takes. I mean, when they made The Shining, it was sort of notorious for how he just emotionally broke down Shelley Duvall, making her take after take, and he would belittle her and scream at her just to get what he wanted out of her. Fincher also, even though his movies are expensive, they're somewhat, he cuts down the budget somewhat to allow himself the freedom of, well, I'm going to film a lot longer than a normal film.
He shot digitally, so there was...
Yeah.
He shot over the equivalent of 1 million feet of film, but it was digital.
But yeah, and again, it's not an issue of cost in terms of that. It's just, it's usually an issue of cost in terms of time,
right,
crew and everybody else. And but I don't know. I totally understand what had happened. I was just surprised Gyllenhaal even brought it up. I imagine a reporter asked him a question. And
he's fairly young.
I know. And he's a good guy. But I imagine he caught him on a day where he just started talking and then later realized, damn, I shouldn't have really. Because for no other reason, those pre-interviews, the point to those pre-interviews is to sell a movie. When you're being interviewed, it's to talk about great and this and that, and you can talk about challenges, but the point isn't to add an element of this was a troubled movie set, which is to some extent what it did.
I didn't get that from the first quote at all.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is all of a sudden you're reading about this movie, and what you're not reading about is this cool movie and about the Zodiac. You're reading about the fact that the director is an asshole or a jerk.
No, see.
Well, that's what I was taking from a lot of the reaction to it, and then the reaction.
I thought
to
you
the
hadn't
reaction.
Heard anything about the movie.
No,
Richard?
I haven't read a thing about the actual plot the plot of the movie, Goofus. I have no idea about the plot.
See,
I
didn't take that message away at all. That there was trouble on the set or any. All I took away from that was Jake Gyllenhaal was tired of doing a gazillion takes.
Which is something that you don't even want anybody to take away. You want them to take away, wow, there's this great movie coming up. That's what I was saying. Were I a publicist, I would have been cringing when that comic came out.
Hollywood and perception is so retarded. Like, you know, why can't we tell the truth? Why can't we say Jake Gyllenhaal was cranky with doing 100 takes for a bunch of these?
Yeah.
That's perfectly valid. He is entitled to be cranky for that. Mm-hmm. It's his job, and he said it's his job, and let's let him be cranky without having to judge him. All right, let's move on.
Yep.
Okay, I've got Oscars.
Yeah.
Need to talk about the Oscars.
I like the Oscars. I enjoyed them.
It's funny because various blogs I read and the reaction, it's people seem fairly evenly split about they were great and oh my God, were they trying to drive viewers away?
I don't get that. I honestly don't get that. There's not much else you can do. All of the stuff in the past that used to drive viewers away, they would complain about, they're gone. The big, long dance numbers. Here they had these little transitional things that were interesting, but for the most part, blissfully short. Those little...
The shadow dancers forming.
I thought they were kind of clever and cool, and the perfect length. They were like 15 seconds each. I thought, that's cool. The 45-minute talk by the president of the Academy, they actually made a joke about it and speed it up. I mean,
it wasn't 45 minutes.
Well, I mean, they used
they
to.
They compressed his talk to literally 60 seconds.
No, and what I'm saying is in the past, there's always been like about four or five elements they'd always say kills the Oscars. And in this particular case, they just said, well, let's make it a minute. And he went along with it and
I thought that was great.
For me, what I loved about the Oscars was they spread the love, and in the few instances where there was a surprise, I thought the surprises were awesome. You know, Alan Arkin. I even liked the best song going to The Inconvenient Truth, even though I thought that was the worst song of them all.
And it's funny because I've heard different reactions to that song. That's a great song. It's a horrible song, and it's
if you have a movie called An Inconvenient Truth. Don't have a song called an ink or with the words inconvenient truth.
I don't know.
All
she did
in
make
it.
A joke about how she had to rhyme it with inconvenient rhyme, but I did it with youth.
That's true.
That was pretty funny.
I like Melissa Etheridge, so I thought that was cool. And I thought it was cool. Was it her that thanked her wife. And I thought, wow. And even though I'm like totally for everything, it was like, wow, I've never heard that said at an award ceremony before. I thought it was cool.
I enjoyed that. And it's funny. I enjoyed the opening, you know, white background montage of all the nominees.
I missed that. I always miss the opening of the Oscars.
Dude, what's your problem?
I was working, and I always, and for us on the West Coast, it starts at 5 or whenever. And I always end up 45 minutes into it. This year I was happy for once. Usually they open with the, with like one of the best supporting actor actresses nods. And for the first year ever, they opened with like 3 lesser awards. So I didn't miss any major awards.
You were so excited. You're so excited about the Oscars. And you're
what can I do? I have to work. I have to work. I don't have TiVo. You do it.
You got to figure something out.
I love them. The only problem is that Oscars, the American Motion Picture Association, winner, they have become extremely vigilant about checking YouTube and pulling off everything. So there was basically no clips available.
Which is hysterical, because really, who cares?
Exactly. And what really killed me is periodically somebody will get a brain spasm and put on the one opening number that I managed to miss and I've always wanted to see. And every time I'll see a link, oh, here's a link to it. Well, by the time the link's up, it's disappeared. It's the Rob Lowe and Snow White singing Rollin' on a River in the 1989, Proud Mary in the 1989 Oscars. It's supposedly the worst incident in the history of the Oscars, and I've always wanted to see it, and I've never seen it. It was like fresh off of his sex scandal with the sex video thing and all that stuff, and they bring him out to sing Proud Mary with a woman dressed up as Snow White, and apparently they didn't bother getting Disney's permission for this and a whole bunch of other stuff.
Wow.
And I saw Movie City News linked it, and I looked at it and go, oh, and they linked it about 4 hours earlier, and I go, oh, I pray it's available, and I go on, and sure enough, it's been taken off.
Richard prays for interesting things.
I do. Anyway.
So I enjoyed them. I thought they were perfectly fine. I liked Jon Stewart's bit better last year, but that's because I'm a huge Stewart fan.
Oh, I liked him better last year, but I was surprised at how much I enjoyed Ellen DeGeneres.
No, she was perfectly
fine. The funny
fine.
Thing about it is she's studiously non-political. It's just Ellen DeGeneres doing Ellen DeGeneres, and I kind of like that. I actually would prefer more topical stuff, but it's funny when they do the topical stuff, they always end up missing on some parts, hitting on others, and it ends up being straining. And Ellen was not straining at all. It was just her being Ellen.
A couple other interesting things. Her walking around the audience stuff wasn't awkward.
Yeah.
And normally that stuff is so awkward. But
you get the feeling she's done that a million times before, so she knows where to go.
Well, it's
that.
Usually not the host. I mean, the host has to do this written material, which may or may not be good. But you can see the awkwardness of the people she's dealing with. But, you know, when she hands the script to Martin Scorsese, that was fun.
That was funny.
Getting the picture with Clint and having Steven Spielberg take the picture, that was hysterical. Oh, could you have me a little more onto the left of the frame? That'd be great. Honestly, that was really, really funny.
That was cute. I think my highlight of the night, and I'm sure with other people, was that they have to announce the Oscars. They have Francis Ford Coppola, Steven Spielberg, and George Lucas. And I thought it was funny when they go 3 Oscaring directors, and George Lucas has to go, I never actually won an Oscar. And we forget that he was actually nominated twice for Best Director. We think of him with the last 3 movies as he's a director, but for American Graffiti and Star Wars, he was nominated for Best Director. But anyway, it's great to have those guys who we know are friends with Martin Scorsese give Martin Scorsese the award. It was kind of cool to see that. Poor Martin Scorsese.
The other cool thing that they didn't do this year,
what's that?
That they did last year, was that whole harping on the movies are a magical experience, and you need to go to the theater to experience it. Renting it, buying or renting a DVD, or God forbid, stealing it. No, that's not how you want to experience a movie. It needs to be in a theater. And they dropped that this year, thank God.
Did they? That was so awkward last year. Did they do any anti-piracy pitches this year?
They did nothing. There was, I missed 12 minutes of it, because we had it on DVR backup, and we're going through it, and then at 7 o'clock,
My
system was set to record 60 minutes and something else at the same time. And so it can't do 3 things at once. It can't record 2 things and let you watch a third. So it it instantly erased those 12 minutes, and I had to turn off 60 anyway. So I missed 12 minutes. I doubt it was anything in there.
So that's
really all I have to say. I enjoyed that. I was happy to have seen as many of the movies that won as I did. Pan's Labyrinth, The Departed, Little Miss Sunshine.
Even though I haven't seen it, I was excited that that German movie won the best.
I'd heard about that. I probably wouldn't have seen it on my own.
I've heard great things about it. And of course, Jeffrey Wells has been raving about it for the longest of times. And I was equally happy for Pan's Labyrinth, but I thought it was interesting because that's one of the two or three categories where you have to have seen all the movies to vote on it. So that and the documentaries, you can't vote on them unless you've seen all of them. And I thought that was the one legitimate, subset of people that saw those movies, but they really balanced them out. I thought that was interesting.
I wanted to see Last King of Scotland, but haven't gotten around to it. I actually did see The Queen last week after the Oscars.
Yeah. What'd you think?
I thought it was okay. Yeah. I don't understand how they got Best Picture out of it. It didn't.
Some people are saying it's like a nice episode of Masterpiece Theater they put on film. It was a good film,
but I don't understand the Best Picture. I mean, maybe you have to be British to really get everything that's going on in it, but I didn't feel like I missed anything significant. And I thought Helen Mirren was good. Mm-hmm. I never understood how
certain years, certain actresses, I don't actually get how that happens, how she became, and I love Helen Mirren. I think she's a great actress. But I don't understand how some years it's just obviously nobody else is going to get it. It's going to be.
Yeah, because like I said, she did a good job, probably worthy of a nomination, but it didn't seem like it was hands down, without question, the best thing this year.
Yeah.
Which was
odd. Some years you'll see them like, what was it? Charlize Theron in Monster. No, she was so clearly, it was like one of the best performances ever, and it was so clearly good, and you're going, okay, I can see that, but in other years, why is it, nobody else is going to get it, and everybody else just start to prepare it. And that was so clearly the way, the minute they announced the nominations, everybody was saying, Helen Mirren, and nobody else is going to get it. And I often think, boy, if I was one of the other actresses, I'd be really ticked off if they were, I mean, it just seems unfair that it's not even a race.
I agree.
Anyway, but I liked them overall. I liked the. I'm trying to figure out. Did you read the open letter to the Academy or whatever by the Seattle director who directed Iraq in Fragments?
Nope.
This is this Seattle guy. And if you're in Seattle.
Oh, wait. I've heard about this. Yeah. I read about it on Wells.
So if you're in Seattle, you're really proud of this guy because he did a documentary with virtually no money about Iraq. And the war and the devastation it's caused in there. And he edited it at a place that I don't know if you've been there, but I've been there quite a bit in Media 911 Art Center. 911 Media Art Center.
What are you talking about?
You went there. Oh, did you go there with me? I can't remember if we did it with Paws.
Back in the day, they actually paid for some classes.
Oh, that's right. We went to the, you went to the classes and I went to some too.
911media.org.
Okay. That's where they edited this movie and they put it together there and they were so proud of him and they didn't think he was going to win because it's the year of inconvenient truth. But it's really cool. And for him, especially, it's cool because a movie that may not get any distribution now is guaranteed a DVD sale because they can put that little Oscar on it, that nominated for an Oscar thing. So anyway, he chose to get very, very extremely offended by Jerry Seinfeld's.
Yeah.
And I honestly thought it was just Jerry Seinfeld being Jerry Seinfeld.
Yeah,
I didn't.
Jerry Seinfeld gets up there and does a little bit of a comedy routine talking about, and he ties it into movies and how, and now I'm going to digress a little bit, how, have you seen this thing at the front of the movies where you're supposed to pick up your own trash?
Yeah.
No, here's the deal. You sell me an overpriced ticket and overpriced food. When I'm done with it, I release my hand, it falls to the floor, and I'm done.
That's
which
right.
I thought was funny. Then he switched to random documentaries.
He talked about the glum or something.
And he says, well, the five incredibly depressing films, which I thought was funny.
It's funny, and it's not in anyway a slam against
them.
You
and I are total documentary buffs, you more so than I, and neither one of us was offended. It's a joke from a comedian.
Yeah, when I saw that letter, I thought, boy, here's
so this
a guy.
This guy gets upset over that comment.
Yeah, he's like, wow, dude, you're there's no benefit to you releasing this open letter or looking for an apology for it. It's like, for God's sakes, and he's bemoaning about, and he's talking, and I think he had a couple legitimate points. He also talked about they changed the restrictions, saying that they've increased your documentary has to be released, and as he put it, by in like 75% more cities. What he means is it has to go from 2 to 6 cities it gets released in, or something.
I heard something about that, and the response was, well, the number of documentaries being submitted is skyrocketing.
Yeah,
so they're trying to.
I know, and
that.
He's saying, and how, and my documentary wouldn't have made it. And he makes a good point. By the same token, if you have any backing behind your documentary, they would. He's saying, and mine was only released in 2 cities, so it made it. Well, now that you know the new rules, even though it's a challenge, for the most part, you're going to make it. He's sort of painting a picture that it's like a bad time for documentaries, and this is awful. It's like, clearly, there has never in the history of motion pictures been a better time for theatrical release of documentaries.
Well, it's, you know, I understand if you spend years of your life and probably all your money, and your life is this project, yep. is a film, and, you know, you feel that it's denigrated by, like, you know, if the film is denigrated or the category is denigrated, suddenly the last 3 years of your life is denigrated, and you take offense at that. And I totally understand that sentiment, but my God, how dumb do you have to be to attack a comedian for making a joke?
Yeah.
No, that is so tone deaf.
I agree.
It's like, don't drive angry. Don't write letters when you're mad.
Yep.
You know, you just give it a couple days, cool down, simmer down.
I agree.
I totally understand being upset that, like, he probably felt that the last 2-3 years of his life were insulted. And that's a very hard thing to take. But you got to let it go.
Yep.
All right.
I agree.
Let's move on. Did you see that they are working on a sequel to L.A. Confidential?
Well, they've been forever for different things.
Well, I don't know what the new news was that prompted this on Dark Horizons. But...
Well, here's the thing. James Ellroy, all of his books are tied together, every single one. So L.A. Confidential becomes White Jazz, and White Jazz becomes... I can't remember what the one after that, and then American Tabloid is one, and it's often the same people in them, same characters, Bud Grissom or whatever his name is, and all these other ones. They're in a bunch of the movies, so it's kind of surprising there hasn't been one. And I've read all of those books. When I went to Europe a couple years ago, or 7 years ago, I literally read 9 James Ellroy books in rapid succession. and it was because you're sitting on trains. What the hell do you do?
Yeah.
So, but anyway, they were so great. And the thing that I remembered most about them was realizing what an incredibly great job they did on L.A. Confidential. His books are so dense, have so many characters. And L.A. Confidential had a million characters, but literally eliminated 2/3 of them just to make the movie. How challenging that is. So if they're making a sequel to L.A. Confidential, it's hard to know, is it a sequel or is it just another telling of the book? Because so much about L.A. Confidential, well, they actually killed characters that need to be in the next book.
It sounded like there was, because they can't get the rights to the Exley name, for some reason those are tied up somewhere else. It won't be White Jazz.
Yeah.
So it's a quote-unquote sequel, but it's not actually using the next book's material.
Jesus.
It's practically a standalone story.
So it has to be. So James Ellroy has to be involved in this.
I actually didn't see anything about that in what I read, but I know you're a huge L.A. Confidential fan.
Oh my God, and a huge! I remember seeing it with you when it came out, and a huge huge James Ellroy fan. But that said, James Ellroy, I mean, that was the realization of his stuff, but then you can also sit down and look at movies like The Black Dahlia, which apparently just blew chunks, which is based on James Ellroy book. And what's the other one that he did there was a James Woods one called, I think it was Cop or something like that, and it was based on one of his books, and it was okay but not great. You need his heavy involvement, and even then I'm not so sure it's going to work out very well.
I was actually had a couple minutes at work to be bored last week, so I flipped over to Whedonesque.com, which is the Joss Whedon fan site, basically.
He's been in the news this last week.
Well, there were a couple of interesting things. I mean, there was some Wonder Woman follow-up, but they're working on a Serenity Special Edition DVD.
Yeah, that was the thing.
And it wasn't planned. It was just the sales of the first one are enough that they're doing the second one.
Yep.
So I don't feel, normally we've discussed this, you feel like you're being ripped off when they're double dipping on special editions.
Yeah, it wasn't planned.
Uber editions. And, well, I hate that, but Anything Firefly Serenity related, I will buy.
What are they putting in it that would be different?
They have hooked me in. They said it'll be a double disc. They'll try and do a cast commentary, although, as he said, the cast is busy working, so that's good.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, we'll find stuff. We haven't really figured it out yet. And this is just, this what I thought was very funny. There'll be an alternate ending if you stop the movie early.
That's cute.
You know, I don't know. They don't really even know what they'll include, but I don't care. I'll get it because cool. I'm a total. I have no objective sense of. Oh, I don't know. Is this really worth the money? So I'll get it. Anyway, I wanted to mention that. There was a blurb that Lucas was doing a discussion over the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles and what's involved in getting those to DVD and the documentaries and what. There was some talk about the live-action Star Wars TV series, yeah. And he said that is still years away.
Yeah.
They're working on this animated stuff right now, and I'm not quite sure when that's supposed to come out. It sounded like he said, they're gonna make 100 episodes and then shop it around.
Wow.
Why
would they even do that? I mean, I can understand because we want to have a complete vision. But
it's so interesting because he's...
Because why wouldn't you... I mean...
He totally has the money to do whatever he wants. And looking at the choices they make...
To do 100 episodes is going to take like 3 or 4 years.
Probably.
And besides that, so much about good television comes in response to the fan reaction. Why would you film something for 3 years and turns out that everybody hates Jar Jar Binks and you've got him for 99 more episodes?
That is a definite concern. Do you focus group that? Do you just trust that the creative people you've worked with for years are going to tell you if it's bad? Does anyone tell George Lucas anything is bad?
That's the thing. What? I mean, I love George Lucas, but watching some of those extras on the 3 Star Wars movies, and it was painful. He would go into a room, and then there'd be all these clay artists who'd done all these different maquettes. And they clearly are shaking. They've got like the 17 different items, and George Lucas is smiling. That's not so good. You can see the person just like they worked really hard on it, but it was like a parade of yes people. It looked really painful, and I thought those movies were bad movies for the most part. I liked them some, but
that didn't. I mean, I saw the same things that you're talking about, but I didn't quite get the same reaction because my feeling is, if your job is to make artistic demos and make 50 of them. For George Lucas, you have to be prepared for the guy to say your work, he doesn't like what you do.
I agree. My point was that it was the tone, it was the feel of those things. You had identical types of things going on when they were in the making of the Lord of the Rings movies, but a totally different feel. You got the distinct impression that Jackson was willing to listen to some guy be passionate about why this particular thing is
keep talking.
Cat fights. Why this particular thing? I'm sorry, I'm so distracted by those cats fighting each other. But you had the distinct impression that Jackson, who was a complete visionary, would be totally persuaded if somebody said this is why we need to do this. And I got the impression none of that ever happens with Lucas. Nobody's going to sit here and go, I really want you to understand why I think this thing should work. I got the feeling Lucas said, I don't want to have those discussions. I want you to line up opportunities for me, and I'm going to pick the one.
You're probably right.
So the reason I say that is just because, and I love Lucas, and I think he's a incredibly positive influence on the industry. I think he's a great guy. He's a great advocate for young filmmakers and everything else. But in his own way of making movies, it seems to me the product of some guy who just has everything and doesn't feel comfortable.
And it's interesting
listening to somebody else.
Listening to This Week in Media with Alex Lindsay, who used to work at ILM.
And what did he do at ILM?
It sounded like he did a couple of different things, but one of the things he did was literally an artist.
Yep.
A graphical artist where he did he worked on the floating senatorial pods in the Senate chamber, you know, the representative from Malastare.
Oh,
blah,
those
blah, blah.
Big, it looks like a big,
the
like
circular
thing. Yeah,
it
sounded
like he worked on the individual pods for that, and he said he worked on the pod race, which was dangerous when he then got in his car at the end of the day.
Oh yeah, because you end up
because your sense of what's a normal speed.
Oh yeah, remind me. Let's talk when we talk about Crackdown later on.
So anyway, talking about there was a Mac unit inside the computer department, the computer special effects department of ILM, and he had to put together this incredibly comprehensive proposal about why they should have more RAM and how they could save money by going faster if they had more RAM.
Yeah.
And telling stories about how you'd walk people like tech representatives or somebody that's built some widget you want, and then you walk them through like the Lucasfilm building. There's some of these buildings on the ranch that have all these artifacts in them, like here's an R2-D2, or here's a Millennium Falcon model, or here's an Indiana Jones jacket or something. And yep. These people are just bowled over by, oh my God, that's the thing. And they totally just start drooling and yep. fanning out. And then they try and hit them up to get their thing for free. Like, oh, so you're going to give us this software product for free? Yeah. And they're not quite, like, Alex Lindsay isn't quite coming out and calling Lucas and Lucasfilm a cheap ass, but that is clearly...
Well, I guess that's how he built his business up.
Well, and, you can't, in my mind, you can actually kind of make a business case for that, saying, look, we're very prominent in this industry.
Yep.
If you let us test your thing for free and we like it, we'll tell people,
yep.
and that's good PR for you.
Yep.
So I totally get that.
That's a good point.
But, you hear these stories about how cheap they are, and you're like, oh, come on, just buy the RAM. That's a no-brainer. Anyway.
Buy the RAM.
What's next?
Speaking of,
I
put another, technically 3/4 of a gig in this laptop, and hopefully it'll run a little smoother.
Okay. Hey, thanks for checking in with that.
Well, I got to a point where I had 512K, which seemed great when I got this computer 2 years ago, but man, is it slowing down to nothing.
I just, before I came over, I was flipping through the trailer, nothing but trailers on the HDNet, and flipping around, and I saw a commercial, which probably wasn't even on HDNet now that I think about it, so it doesn't matter that I mentioned that. Hawaii 5.0. Finally on DVD.
5.0.
Wow, talk about tech Freudian slip there. Hawaii 5.0,
yep.
Finally on DVD. New picture, new sound.
I've been watching the ad too.
Oh, just finally. Has there been a hue and cry? Has there been a movement for Hawaii 5.0?
Hawaii 5.0 was very popular. We forget about it now because it never really... A lot of those hour-long episodic shows are really popular reruns initially, and then they just get more and more dated. Nowadays, the only ones you see from the 70s are Columbo. Columbo and the Rockford Files, to some extent, work well today, but others... But Hawaii 5.0 was hugely popular, and I imagine there's some people in their 60s, like my dad, would be, wow, it's finally on DVD now, I can watch it.
It just struck me as funny. It's like, oh, finally, wow.
Well, and I think also Hawaii 5.0 was not... has not really been on in syndication.
That's true.
So
unless it's on Nick at Night, which I never watched.
But they definitely did. They did the same thing to some extent they did with Star Wars, but they remastered the whole thing. They cleaned the hell out of it. And Hawaii 5.0 was filmed like in 60mm with old stock, and it looks scuzzy when it came out. Well, now it just looks glorious from what I understand. Too bad this glorious thing is the same old goofy show. What I like about Hawaii 5.0, though, is it was filmed in Hawaii, and it was filmed with local locales. So it's a really great way to see a vintage Honolulu from like 1969 to 1972.
See that none of the buildings have changed.
Yeah, I know. Well, I've never been there, but I love looking at
I've driven
stuff.
Around Oahu, so I'm an expert as I hold up the Test Drive Unlimited Xbox game.
Like I tell everybody with Test Drive, I end up with that Test Drive Unlimited made me totally want to go to Oahu. I feel like I know that damn thing. I've driven everywhere.
That's pretty funny. So I've been wanting to talk about this for a couple of weeks now, but haven't written it down and remembered it. We should talk a little bit about branding.
Mm-hmm.
Branded.
Branded.
They say he was a fruit. Branded. Anyway. This thing about when AT&T bought Singular.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, first it was interesting because SBC bought SBC, one of the Baby Bells, much bigger company than AT&T, buys AT&T and keeps the AT&T brand.
Yep.
Because they figure the AT&T brand has much bigger penetration than yep. SBC.
Somebody in the Northwest has never even heard of SBC, but
right.
Everybody's heard of AT&T.
Right. So they do that. Then they buy Singular. And they announce immediately, we're dumping the Singular brand and calling it AT&T Wireless. And there's been a couple articles about how much money was pumped into building the Singular brand.
Well, Singular prior to that had been AT&T.
Well, no, it was two companies. It was...
Well, part of it was AT&T.
Southern, one of the Southern Bells, and... Well, AT&T Wireless was bought by Singular.
Exactly. And so the AT&T...
Well, that was... I don't think it was the only... It was part of...
It was,
but morphed into Singular.
But a lot of the they literally spent $1 billion to build up the Singular brand from AT&T Wireless.
Well, that was one of the components of Singular.
One of them, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And it was funny because right after that was transferred, I remember reading an article of AT&T saying, actually, we think they're still, you know, we're probably going to build up the AT&T Wireless cell brand again and build it from scratch because we think there's enough consumer whatever interest or value or something, and then clearly that they switched gears and they got bought. Now they bought Singular, but it's just interesting to me that they essentially flushed this money down the toilet.
Yep.
And they say, well, Singular, AT&T, what do you do? And they're going to morph it into AT&T Wireless. And you just, I wonder how much it costs to do that.
No, it's incredible.
Clearly, they've decided it's a business benefit, or they wouldn't do it.
And it's expensive, and you have to. It has to be all encompassing. I remember when you and I worked at Paws, and we rebranded. I came up with this new logo. We had this new stuff. Today, they're still sending out stuff with the old logo 6 years later because they still haven't quite flushed it all out.
Right, there's different ways to do a brand, and one is to chuck everything with the existing brand, which is expensive and wasteful.
Yeah, which is what AT&T or Singular is doing.
Probably. Or you cycle through the old stuff.
Yep.
But God, I look at that and I think, what an incredible waste of money.
The funny thing for me is, and I don't know if everybody else is the same, but I have my carrier. So most people have cell phones. So what you're doing is you're basically trying to convince people to switch, basically, because most people have them. If you're going to get a phone service, you're either sticking with your one or getting an old. You're not branding for new stuff. Well, for me, I don't really pay attention that much to the money because they all seem to have deals, this and that. For me, it's entirely about, is the goddamn call going to get dropped off on that spot on I-5 that I'm driving at? And what I end up doing is when I've and I've been at three different companies since I've had cell phones the last decade. And what I've done, when I've got them was what I just asked other people. What is the coverage like at my house? Come over here, since you have this other carrier.
Sure.
Is it as crappy as here? I literally don't care one iota about the brand. So to me, it doesn't matter. And I'm not sure why, if Singular does have a huge market penetration, does it have a bad name? I mean, why would you get rid of it?
I would say they've decided as much money they pumped into building the Singular brand, it's still not as widely known as AT&T. And apparently, that's an important factor. Yeah. But to me, you're right. In the cell phone world, if you're going to choose a carrier, you've got three or four choices. It's not like Singular's lost in the shuffle, AT&T would stand that much bigger above Verizon or T-Mobile.
My sense with cell phone companies is they scrambled, spent tons of money building up the quality of the network, and then they stopped. They literally, the sense is, on my part, there's not much else energy in that. And they figure, okay, now we can make up for it by just more advertising and more branding. And my feeling is, pump some of that money back into putting a cell tower near my house so I don't lose calls literally at my house every single day. Mm-hmm. Do something like that, because that, and little stuff like that, it's hard to advertise, but that's the thing that keeps me as a customer. And I think keeps most people as customers.
What was T-Mobile before they were T-Mobile?
I don't know. I had T-Mobile, but it was...
I'm suddenly trying to remember their name before they...
It was something, yeah, I remember. It was a German company.
Well, Deutsche Telekom owns them, and they rebranded, but I can't remember what it was.
Yeah, I can't remember either. I'm totally blank, and that was my first, the first cell phone I had from Paws was the predecessor to T-Mobile.
You just love to say Paws, don't you?
Why? What's wrong with, what do you mean? No, I don't know. I don't know what that means.
With a V?
I don't know.
Whatever. It's not important. The other interesting branding decision recently, The Ford Fusion, they're dropping that. They're going to call it the Taurus.
Mm-hmm.
Fusion, and I assume disappointing sales. They took a look. Well, we've got this name that we built up over like 20 years.
which I always found was the lamest name for a car, a Taurus.
But was a pretty reliable, you know, a pretty decent family sedan.
Yep.
You know, and then they dropped the name, did this Ford Fusion.
It's called Rearranging the Deck Chairs on the Titanic.
Boy, just watching the American car companies is quite something.
It's so painful and so obvious. I mean, 4 years ago when Ford had a $10 billion surplus and was putting nothing in R&D into possibly what might come down the pike, somehow, like, they figured, I'm assuming they figured, wow, we're going to war to protect cheap gas prices, and this is never going to change. We're in the, it's sort of like Homer Simpson when everyone saw the cut to him and in his brain is like him wearing a top hat and with holding money bags. I mean, that's like the Ford executives. It's so obvious.
Well, it's just, and what's interesting, what's even more frustrating about that is Ford makes some really good cars in Europe.
I know,
the Mondeo is a fantastic car. They've got their version of the Focus hatchback.
Yep.
is a really good enthusiast's car. The SV whatever SVT3, I don't know,
yep.
Blanking, but those are supposed to be really good cars that they don't sell here, which is really disappointing. And you know, we can tie it into media from a branding perspective, but that's a whole different business discussion.
Yeah.
What else do we got here? That's a really intelligent thing to say. The did you get my email about the Lebowski Fest?
Yeah, although I didn't. It wasn't a link, so and I was.
Yeah, I thought it was.
No, it was a. It wasn't a live link, so I'd have to cut it and paste it. Which
is that
I did.
Too much trouble for you?
It was in that particular case. That was why it was honestly one of the things that prompted me to get the more RAM that you just poo-pooed a minute ago.
I didn't poo-poo. I just don't think people really care about
it was
RAM laptop.
Every time I like open up multiple things, all of a sudden my computer says, you know, screw it, I'm going to take a 5-minute break here and sort everything out. And I'm sitting here waiting for Explorer to open and this and that, and I want to throw the computer through the
Lebowski.
Window. Well, I know, but it ended up screwing up. So it was honestly the Lebowski thing was one of the predicating emails that caused me to go and immediately order more RAM.
So basically, Lebowski Fest is in Seattle this year.
Yay!
The bowling part is sold out, but I guess they're doing a screening at the Showbox.
Cool.
But it's like $15, so we should probably see if there's tickets. But I'm not sure what else is involved with that, if it's just the screening or
just
not.
Just go see the movie and listen to people yammer.
Did you just F it?
Oh, did I?
What's the time index? You got to go back and pull that up,
oh,
man.
Oh, 52:40. You'll have to remind me.
Goober. Yeah, but it's, well, I don't know. Will it be like a Rocky Horror thing where everyone's talking through it? Because I think that would actually be fun. Or, you know, if I do my Rain Man thing and start just talking along with it, well, will I get poo-pooed? If everybody was doing it, I think it would be a lot of fun, quite honestly.
Speaking of Rain Man, that's the latest DVD I got.
Well, I'm not off of Lebowski.
Sorry.
I had to work at home. We had a little bout of snow last week, and I now have a laptop at work, so I can elect to work at home if I need to. And even though I probably could have driven in, it's like, why yep. risk some moron in the snow hitting me before I even get to the freeway?
Yep.
Because people in Seattle cannot drive when there's any form of moisture around. And so I did that. And towards the end of the day, you know, and actually the laptop has a DVD player in it. So I tried to put you and I used to watch The Big Lebowski in our office over and over and over as background music.
Yeah, it was just on repeat.
So I thought
about
I'd do this
three times a day.
I thought it'd be fun to do the same thing. I'd put the DVD in the DVD player in the laptop.
It's so great when that.
And just have it minimized and have it going in the background.
The Sons of the Pioneers music starts coming up, and I just that movie's so great.
Anyway,
it's just so great.
I do that, and you know, Windows Media Player comes up and says, "Oh hey, you need to buy a plugin to play a DVD."
Yep.
And I sent you an email, and I'm like, what is this happy horse plop?
Yep.
I was so mad. I was mad.
Yep.
It's a DVD player. It's a laptop. What is the problem here? Windows Media Player, which works perfectly well, and it's now telling me, no, you got to spend more money.
Yep.
That is so retarded.
It's
That is a fundamental problem. That is a fundamental retardation of thinking.
But you have to blame the person who provided you the laptop. They provided
you. No, I don't. That Microsoft Windows should include a built-in DVD playing software.
I don't disagree.
That and for, is and for, retarded.
But the challenge there is it's a matter of the codec. It's a codec that is owned to be able to play back MPEG-2 compression. The codec is owned by a company and they demand royalties. And
Apple seems to find the money to pay the royalty.
I don't disagree. Apple does. They do it and they hand it out free because it directs people. Because literally, the royalty is like 10 cents a copy.
I just find that so frustrating. If I was a normal person, not a tech dork is what I mean by that. And that would really, really frustrate me. Yeah. I mean, I'm a tech person. I understand what you're saying. Well, it's still really, really frustrating.
The irony or interesting thing is every single DVD player that's sold comes with a DVD software that has that codec, which Windows can use. So every single one. But you're in that one little percentage where you had a work laptop where they cut every single thing to the bone if it wasn't necessary. Well, I don't understand any other reason why, because a DVD player, when it's sold, if it was retail or any other way, it's going to come with some version of a DVD player.
Well, it could be that it was stripped, but it's not like, you know, Solitaire isn't on there, although I honestly haven't even looked.
Well, but maybe things like this are ways they can save money. In other words, when they buy that DVD player, it costs them like $7. So the $7 in there. When Dell buys it, they also have to buy a software player for it, and that might cost them like $1 a unit, of which 10 cents goes.
Frustrating. Yeah, I agree. That's just so retarded.
So why didn't you just download iTunes and see if you'll play on that?
Will it?
I don't know. Does iTunes play?
I don't know. I went to downloads.com, which is a CNET site, and typed in DVD player.
But
I downloaded a couple of free versions, but none of them really worked.
See, when you're saying Apple plays it, you're right, because Apple themselves, the Apple machines play it because they have paid that. And if you buy any laptop computer, it's the manufacturer that chooses to put that in there. Windows, if they were to distribute it free with the free Windows Media Player, that it would be a business decision. It would cost them like probably a couple, 20, 30,
well,
$40 million. I don't disagree, but I'm saying that Windows, like here's the conundrum Windows that Bill Gates has. 999 out of 1,000 people that have a DVD player have that already. Okay. So they could go out and they could buy it and put it in Windows Media Player for the 1 out of 1,000 people that don't have it already.
You know why that's dumb? You know why that doesn't even... I can make a business case against that. Because when you pop a DVD into your Windows-based laptop and there's a problem with the player, you usually... Normal people are not going to blame Roxio or whoever, you know, Joe Blow's software company. They're going to blame Microsoft.
Yep.
Because they think... They are probably going to associate their experience more with Windows than they will with whoever wrote the program.
Yeah.
It's not logical. It's not Microsoft's fault. I understand everything of what you're saying about a business decision, about not wanting to cover that. But then you have to think about, look, if people are going to encounter a problem for something that's more and more of a common experience, playing DVDs on computers, on laptops, it's worth it to make the experience... to have more control over the experience and build it into Windows Media Player and say, look, it's worth it for us to pay the 10 cents a copy or whatever, so that when somebody puts a DVD in, it works in a way we want it to work. We have more control over the experience, and that way the person is happier.
They're still going to have problems with them. It's, you know, because what you're talking about, the problem you're talking about, it's just it works or it doesn't work. It's missing a codec that you have to pay for. What you're talking about, when something goes wrong with a DVD player, they're going to blame Microsoft. That's not going to be solved by making sure everybody has that codec, because there's other reasons, and it legitimately
is. I'm not talking about a hardware failure.
Yeah.
But there's an unlimited amount of DVD players.
Here's how it should have been solved in the get-go anyway, is they should have built it into the, like they do with cassette tapes and like they did with blank CDs, they should have built it into the cost of the DVD. So you buy a DVD and like a half a cent goes to support the person who created the codec to allow you to play it back. That way, nobody ever has to worry about it.
They should have done something different. I'm just...
Yeah. No, I agree.
It's frustrating to me, and I can... To me, it makes more sense for Microsoft to pay the extra money to provide a better experience to the user.
Well, see, again, like I'm saying, everybody has it. You had this unique experience.
No, I don't.
Okay, everybody but you had it, and here was the problem. Ironically, it was your employer that could have elected when they bought that, when they spec'd out that player saying, why don't we give them the capability of watching a DVD? And they might have made a case going, we don't need to have that because they're just going to watch movies. You know, there's a million others.
From the standpoint that it's a business computer, I understand completely. If that was a decision and that's the only reason that I can't do it, that's fine. That's totally valid that you don't want your employees necessarily watching movies.
But they were the ones that made that choice.
But I'm still saying Microsoft should own that experience.
Yeah.
They should. That's all I'm saying.
Well, I don't disagree. When you get Adobe Premiere, if you want to encode, Adobe pays it's $30 a copy or something for you to have the right to actually encode an MPEG-2 compression. It used to be like a separate thing, and it was this encoder. Now they built it in, but they pay a lot of money for you to be able to encode in that. And it couldn't be $30 because they sell it, but probably $10 a copy more pronounced.
Before I got distracted by ranting, so what I did was I went, because when I work at home, I work in my kitchen, the kitchen table. So I went out to the living room, which is behind the kitchen, popped in the Big Lebowski DVD, turned off the TV, and just turned up the stereo. Mm-hmm. So I listened to it that way, and it took me back.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh yeah, and I'm working and talking through the entire movie. It was so much fun.
Now, when you're without the visual, do the F-bombs become more prominent? They just fade into the background still.
You know, we've seen it a gazillion times.
I know it's weird how you can't, I did see a little bit of Spinal Tap the other day, and I haven't seen it in 5 years. And a little bit, I was able to recapture that very first couple of times I saw it. But Lebowski, it's still, I mean, I've seen scenes from it literally a couple weeks ago. So it's cool on the one level because it just takes me back to seeing it over and over. But I need to wait 10 years to get to recapture, that forgetting scenes and going, oh, this is funny, this and that, because I can't have that experience anymore because it's so ingrained into my cortex. I friggin' love that movie. What's the new Coen Brothers movie they're working on?
I don't remember. I thought last I heard they were doing another one of those, their quote-unquote idiot movies with George Clooney.
Oh, let's hope it's good.
Well, idiot meaning that the characters that he plays, in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Yeah, which was great.
And in...
But Irreconcilable... Or what was it called? Or not Irreconcilable Differences. Intolerable Cruelty.
Yeah.
Just didn't really work. And then... what was it recently? But I like The Man Who Wasn't There. But Intolerable Cruelty wasn't very good.
Let's see. Oh, I've got a bit of... There was a... AppleInsider.com is saying that the next generation iPod won't come out till third quarter.
Really?
So a lot of people were saying, well, they will release the next iPod using the iPhone-like enclosure, the new hardware version before the iPhone. And now the rumors are saying not so.
Isn't there another
cannibalize iPhone sales?
Oh, I don't blame him. Isn't there another announcement coming up? But some
NAB,
NAB,
the National Association of Broadcasters. So that's probably going to be the next Final Cut version, and/or the next Tower Pro Tower.
Did you see that their IT or Apple TV? Now I go to their website, it's saying shipping mid-March.
Yeah, they bumped it back a couple of weeks. They did not meet their end-of-February deadline.
Well, the funny thing is, I am so completely broke, there's no way I can even afford it. But the more I think about it, I really actually do want to get the damn thing, but I can't afford it. So
because
it'd be interesting to know internally what's exactly going on there.
Well, there's some speculation that it's there's still some pending FCC approvals.
Oh, really? For the Apple TV?
That was one random speculation thing. Who knows?
Yeah.
You know, I'm fine with it because I can't if I buying Apple TV for me means for me means buying a whole new computer system. So that's like a $3,000 expenditure I'm not terribly eager to get into.
For me, it would just snap right in, and I would I have two computers I could use it from.
Because it uses N. I don't have N. My computer doesn't support N.
See, I'm not even going to use the... I could care less about the wireless. I'm using the hard... Because I have a full network, like a hardwired network. So I was just going to use that.
Yeah, I don't... For me to do it right, I'd want a beefy new computer.
Yeah, no, I hear
you. It's just a whole big thing of money. So let's finish up with video games. Mm-hmm. I am returning to you, Test Drive Unlimited and Call of Duty 3.
I noticed on Test Drive Unlimited, you've beat my gamer score. You have more achievements than me.
Well, you'll now have the opportunity to reclaim.
I don't know. I thought I played a lot, but I think you played it more than I did.
I still have that compulsion to drive every road.
Yeah.
But I know that I'm never going to have the time to do that.
What percentage did you get?
God, I'm at about 1,100 or 1,200 miles. That I know. I don't know what that is in percentage of roads driven.
Oh.
The next, because there's two...
That's actually about where I was at.
There's two length achievements that are left. 5,000 miles, which clearly I'm not close to, and drive the whole island. Yeah. And as a percentage-wise, I don't remember where I was there, but I remember in terms of the 5,000 goal, I was at about 1,100 or 1,200. So that wasn't...
I think I was at about 1,100 or 1,200, too, and I was at 1%. And I went down and went to like a little section and took every single road in this one little thing and it took 2 hours to do it. And then I get back and I'm like 51%. I mean, it just made no difference. It was like, it really, whoever, they should give whoever finishes that goal literally 500 gamer points because it's so ridiculous. But
I'd love to achieve it, but I don't have the time.
No, I don't have it either. I'm just saying that it's such an epic achievement. When having played the game, you realize what an epic achievement is, that they should have either had some graduated achievements.
Some OCD 12-year-old.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's talk about Crackdown, which you bought last week.
Yep.
Even though you're broke.
I am totally broke, but I found the money for Crackdown.
How are you liking it?
Oh, it's awesome. It's interesting. People keep calling it, it's the sandbox game, and it's like Grand Theft Auto. And I guess it is like that, but although it's really nothing like Grand Theft Auto, other than the sense that it's that you have an open world and you can kind of choose what you want, but Grand Theft Auto is actually pretty linear. You can't really get to certain spots at certain times. Certain things are not even remotely open to you, and has very specific coordinated missions. This one here is not that at all. It's you run into whatever kingpin boss and he's got a million people around him and you kill them all to get to the kingpin boss and you can do it whatever order you want. The addictive nature of it is they do have these, you can power up in certain ways. You can power up your strength. You can power up your jumping ability, and other stuff. And you do that by completing certain aspects of the game. It's very, very extremely addictive. And you'll just sit... And it's one of the rare games I've ever been in where you just kind of, part of the time, don't really care about, you got to go kill these bosses. You just want to run around finding more jumping orbs or other stuff. And a lot of it, so much of the game takes place on rooftops of these giant skyscrapers. Mm-hmm. And I'm a person who has total scared of heights. I mean, I totally cannot stand heights. And in the game, sometimes you end up feeling pretty creeped out by it because you're looking over a ledge or whatever. And after a while, you realize you generally don't die if you misjudge a thing, so you get used to it. But, you're walking around, you're looking at that rooftop over there, you're going, God, I could probably make that.
Well,
you know,
I played the demo last week, like I talked about, and I really liked the way the guy jumped and how clearly it becomes more interesting the more powers you get and can do different things. And I've never played a sandbox game, really, so that's interesting to me. I don't get the thrill from beating up the hookers like you do.
I don't get any thrill from being at hookers.
Whatever. You've sent me emails in the past about...
And they were always joking, Goofus.
Whatever, hooker beater.
And there's no hookers in this game.
Hooker beater.
Plenty of people to kill.
But they're all bad guys.
Well, no, you can get in trouble for it, but you can kill citizens.
Anyway, so I'm a little more drawn to the non-negative aspects of this sandbox game. Anyway, it's on order for me, so I should have it sometime this week.
Well, and then when you do it, we can play cooperative too. It's like Gears of War. I don't know how well it works, but you can. There's certain achievements you can get if you log on with somebody. Apparently, it's their setup is kind of hinky because how you log in and off. But once you do play cooperative, you can you can achieve certain things in only co-op mode, which are really cool. And to be able to finish off, like a lot of new games, you know, people forget Halo introduced some really cool aspects that we forget about. Prior to Halo coming on, basically you went around finding weapons, and then you had like six weapons in your arsenal, and you just cycled through them. And Halo introduced the concept of you got your two weapons. You drop one if you need a sniper rifle, well, you can't use the bazooka launch or whatever. And that really adds an element of gameplay that I love, and it's similar in this one where they have that. It also has the other element, which I love, which is you're not running around looking for health packs. You basically go and go around a corner trying to get hit, and you regenerate, which is another thing Halo did. And this game here plays that up to the hilt. It's a complete shooter. And one thing I don't like about it is it's respawning people. If you're going to kill somebody, you can't kill everybody and then move on to the next level. They just keep respawning. You got to kill enough to get through it to move to another part of, like if you're on an oil platform. In some levels, it's good because part of what you need to do is just like punch or kick people until your strength meters up.
Uh-huh.
So you can go to like a respawn point. You know, they're going to keep coming out this door. So you just stand in front of the door, wait for three more to come out, kick them, and progress. And there's nobody else shooting at you, so you don't have to worry too much. So
well, see, yeah, I want to play it. I want to play it bad. I don't know why. It's a little hard to articulate, but I'm just jonesing to play it, and I can't, and it's frustrating.
Yeah, I've had it, and I don't know how many hours I put in on it, but I've already achieved, except for driving, which the driving sucks this game. I've achieved maximum on every one of the levels, and I've killed three quarters of the henchmen. And once I kill all of them, it's done. And then you just go around, I guess, trying to find the last of the orbs or whatever. I found 380 of the 500 jumping orbs and probably 50 of the 300 hidden orbs. So, I don't know. Fun game. Really cool. Boy, my nose is plugging up.
Yeah, that's obvious. All right. No emails this week to discuss.
My niece has apparently been listening to our podcast in class. On one level, I was glad she was listening to the podcast. On another level, she shouldn't be listening to it in class.
You know what? If I didn't have my Palm Pilot with Solitaire, there's a number of college classes I would not have gotten through.
I hear you.
Oh, my God. And, you know, and then as you get into the business world and you need to go into meetings you hate, like group, like whole division meetings, and you're like, I need to bring a notebook to doodle on.
Absolutely.
Learning how to waste time when you're not paying attention is a critical skill that you need to succeed in life. So, yeah, you guys rock at mustardayonnaise.com is how you contact us. Mm-hmm. If you ever choose to.
Yep.
300, there's no way I'm not going to see 300.
I'm all mezzo.
I know. I know you've discussed it. It's a little too stylistic and slow motion.
Is it next week? Next week comes out?
Friday. And I fully plan on seeing it after work on Friday. I cool. really, really hope that nothing gets in the way of that. Cool. I am so looking forward to that movie. Black Snake Moan is out. I want to see that. I don't know if I'll get around to it. But
I am so looking forward. It's got great reviews.
It's Christina Ricci in a chain.
Not just in a chain. I mean, not just in her underwear through the whole movie. Apparently, she's got like five nude scenes in this movie.
Really?
I'm thinking, wow. Christmas has come early.
I need to step up.
But it looks like a great movie. It looks funny. It looks
And Sam
clever.
Jackson as a blues player. Who,
yeah, as a balding blues player.
It looks
Christian.
Really inventive. Yeah. It looks cool. Looks
I'm
really good.
I'm hoping it has all the great aspects that I liked in Hustle & Flow and not some of the creakier aspects because the same director, but yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And I love the posters. The posters
yeah,
are like a pulp novel poster.
So that's what we have going on for the near future.
Cool.
Thanks for listening. I'm Matt.
And I'm Richard.
That's it.
I'll be up to it.